I think oftentimes we get caught up in being something for people, and that's not what I would encourage at all. I would really encourage, you know, keeping in mind who you are, what are the things that are authentic and real about you, but things that other people would appreciate hearing. And so when I think of likability, I think of those one-on-one conversations and interactions you have, and definitely not being fake, because people will pick up on you being fake and will pick up on you trying to be something that you're not. But for me, likability in that sense means asking people about themselves, asking questions, and being genuinely interested.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Human Entrepreneur. Today, we're really lucky to be joined by Matt Scott. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be part of The Human Entrepreneur.
Awesome, Matt. So do you want to just give our audience a basic introduction to yourself and what you do and why I've brought you on here today?
Sure thing. So I'm Matt Scott, and I am a social impact project manager and storyteller, and I'm here today to talk about storytelling and my experience with that. And to give a little bit more of a background on me, I am the manager of storytelling and engagement at the innovation agency Second Muse, which works on global social impact programs. So over my time at Second Muse over the last 4 years, I've worked with Nike, with the United Nations, the US AID program, the Australian government, and others, all to help them better tell their stories and engage with their communities. And my main project at Second Muse is NASA's International Space Apps Challenge, which is a global series of hackathon events. It takes place over one weekend each year. Space Apps is now in its 9th year, and I'm honored to be the global community manager and storyteller for Space Apps. And then I should also mention that outside of my work at Second Muse, I am the founder of Let's Care, which is an organization that puts out podcasts, films, and other content that is meant to highlight underrepresented people in social change and really tell their stories. And to date, through Let's Care, and specifically through a project called 180 Degrees of Impact and a film series called 20s and Change, I've interviewed about 100 change makers and shared their stories to date. So I've said the word storytelling so many times, and that's really the focus of my work and my passion.
Awesome. So yeah, today we're really lucky to be joined by Matt. He's the expert of storytelling. We've been trawling the internet trying to find the best person, and we found Matt, and he's going to be giving us a masterclass. So you as student entrepreneurs, when you're giving maybe your elevator pitch to someone, you're meeting them down the corridor, or you're going into an important meeting with maybe an investor or someone else, a project partner, or trying to form a collaboration, and you need to tell the story of yourself, sell yourself, and maybe sell your business, it's really important to be able to tell a story. So that's why we've got Matt on today. So Matt, why do you think storytelling's important for people?
Really, for me, the importance of storytelling started when I was a student. My freshman year at George Washington University here in Washington, D.C., I became part of Students Against Sexual Assault, which is an organization that worked at the time to provide awareness and education on campus when it comes to sexual assault. And now, the hashtag MeToo movement is very popular, and people are very aware of that on, you know, in water cooler conversations all over the place. But at the time, people weren't talking about sexual assault and this very important issue. And so for me, storytelling became something that wasn't only nice, but necessary. We needed storytelling to get people to spend time to listen and to pay attention to these important issues. And that is where it started for me, because my freshman year, I was just getting involved. I dove in, and really what we focused on were statistics. We wanted to show people why statistically this was a relevant issue to them. What I learned over the course of my 4 years at GW and as part of Students Against Sexual Assault was that really storytelling and getting people in the community who were trusted on board with our message was so critical. So I engaged with student athletes to have them get on board. I engaged with Greek life and fraternities and sororities to get them on board. I engaged with other student organizations to get them on board, with other student leaders and administrators. And through storytelling, we managed to actually get people to care on our campus. And we went from having an organization that had only 5 or 6 members show up to meetings, sometimes less than that, to having dozens of members show up to meetings, to having hundreds of people on our email lists and as part of our network. And again, I really chalk that up to the power of storytelling. And that's where I first realized that storytelling matters. Even if you are a student, it matters your whole journey. And I think today, more than it did when I was a student, storytelling is critical because of all of the channels that we all have to manage.
Awesome. So thanks for that, Matt. You know, so every time we, as a student entrepreneur, I've gone for these pitching workshops, very first thing we're told is you need to have a hook. And most of the times the hook itself is a story you tell. And then you start with your business pitch. What is it about those stories that makes it so authentic? Is it the fact that you're being vulnerable, or is it the fact that you're just genuinely connecting with another human being?
I think it's actually both, and that's a great observation. So something I've found, especially through interviewing people for 180 degrees of impact, is that there are differences in how people express themselves and tell their stories. You could ask someone about where they're from and what they care about, and their answer could be 2 words, or it could be 2 beautiful sentences or paragraphs that you really attach to and are hooked by. And so what I would say is that when you have a story that relates to the audience, that's really critical, and that's what gets them to care. Vulnerability absolutely helps, because at the end of the day, we all have things that that make us vulnerable, or that make us more human, really. That's how I like to put it. And by showing that humanity, you're connecting with other humans who are in the room, whether they're watching or listening or judging you, whatever the case might be. And so there are a ton of factors when it comes to the effectiveness of storytelling. But the key thing I would say, and it's a lesson that I learned from my first job out of college, working for a digital marketing agency called Social Driver, which was that, you know, really you have to put people at the center. And we would say that all the time, put people at the center. And I still apply that lesson every single day of my work, always thinking about, what does my audience want to hear? What do they want to learn? What don't they know that would shock them, surprise them, excite them, educate them? And then I go from there. So regardless of the vulnerability piece and the emotion piece and the statistics that you might bring and facts and information and the actual value of what you're pitching, always remember to put people at the center is my best piece of advice for that.
Awesome. And you mentioned the fact that you need to connect with your audience. And I'm sure it depends on the audience you're talking to, right? The story needs to be mended in a way which will appeal to a particular audience. So what is there? My question is there a particular framework you use to tell a story in a particular context?
You know, with every story, what I do is, again, I start by asking, what is it that the audience wants to understand? I think it's actually really important to go in with an open mind when it comes to how you structure the story. And so I don't have a framework for how I tell a particular story. At this point, for me, understanding how to tell a story has been something that is second nature and something that I learn. And so for me, it means asking questions until I feel like I understand the context and I understand the audience. So if you don't feel like you understand the audience, I think that means you have to ask more questions and do more research to learn more and go a little bit further. I would also say that you have to consider that different audiences need different things and want different things. If you're in front of a room of United Nations leaders, like I've been in some of the work that I'm doing, the way that I present myself is a lot different than I'll be at a NASA Space Apps hackathon, where I'm in front of a bunch of younger people who are, you know, the typical hackathon techies. And so really keep your audience in mind. Really make sure also to learn from your experiences with communities in the past. So to give an example of that, I, through my work at Second Muse, have spent, you know, different amounts of time with people who work in the international development world. And I don't know the international development world particularly well, but in spending time with those people, I learned about the things that they care about. I learned about what the customs are and the culture is, so how people dressed, how casual or formal they were. And when I had the opportunity to present to people at the U.S. Embassy in Ethiopia about 2 years ago, I made sure to take those learnings and apply them. And so, you know, there's not a framework, but it's so good to keep an open mind to ask questions and make sure that you really know who you're talking with.
I think those are really great points. And I think the idea of getting to know your audience and researching it is very key. And I completely agree with you. But for the ones listening, could you probably talk to us about how you can actually research an audience effectively?
Right. And so I would even say, I wonder, like, is there an example of an audience that you could give, or a situation that you might want to, that we could workshop in on this podcast to answer that question?
Sure. So take a student enterprise that is looking at combating, say, a mental health issue such as social anxiety on campus, and you have a great product, you have a proof of concept, and you're pitching this to the top leadership of your university. How mm-hmm. would you present a story?
I relate to that a lot, because I as a student leader on my campus, not only as part of Students Against Sexual Assault, but in other student organizations, I was in that situation where I had to pitch to top leaders at our university. And so I definitely have some tips for that. What I would say first and foremost, and just to point this out, is that this is advice that you could take regardless of what the topic is and what the focus is. But I think that you selected the topic of mental health is also useful, because there are certain things that you'll want to do if you're talking about a topic that is more sensitive, more personal. So first, just to start out with the top leadership of the university, the great news is that you know exactly who you're meeting with. And this is actually something that benefits me a lot in interviewing people for 180 degrees of impact, because I schedule my time to interview them. And beforehand, I will look up and research anything I could find. So I'll pull up any interviews I could find featuring them. I'll pull up their biography, of course, and read that. If there are other pieces out there, other stories out there about them, videos that have featured them, I'll watch those. And so there's definitely a step that you could take if you're going into a situation with anyone really that you're aware of, where you do your research. So Google the person, look at their bio, try to understand really what do they care about, what are their priorities. Oftentimes, and I think this is the biggest mistake that I've seen student leaders make, is that you'll go into meetings, or students will go into meetings, and they'll have their talking points, they'll have their pitch deck and their proof of concept, and they'll talk about what they're working on. So in the example you gave, they'll go in and they'll talk about their mental health startup and their solution. And yet they won't even really take the time to understand what is it that the top leadership cares about. Is the top leadership familiar with these mental health issues? Do they need you to go through statistics and stories, or are they already on board and advocating for you and the cause? And so it's so important to take that time to do the research of people you're meeting with. And whenever you have the benefit of knowing who those people are, I think it's a huge gift, because you're really able to tailor your message to them and make sure that you're not giving them anything they already know, because you don't want to waste their time. And you want to make sure that you're giving them information that they don't know or that they would find valuable. The one other thing I would just add quickly is that it's also helpful to understand how these people typically interact with others. So if you're on a campus, there is probably a student newspaper that might talk about, you know, an administrator's history, what issues they've gotten on board with, what experiences they've had with students that haven't been positive. So if you familiarize yourself with that, you could prepare yourself for that conversation with the administrator.
So it's more like prepping yourself for the interview beforehand by actually knowing the people within the room itself, and then understanding the context and what they would bring to the table and what they would like to hear, and then tailoring your presentation to them.
Absolutely. And I think going back to the idea of putting people at the center, that is critical. What you want to do going into that meeting, sure, you want to pitch your concept. And again, taking that example, you want to get them on board with this important, life-changing mental health solution. But, you know, overall, you also want to create value for that person. And what that looks like for different people is different. If you are the head of a university, creating value might mean that, you know, the student who's coming to pitch to you is giving you something that solves a problem on campus. So maybe a lot of students on campus struggle with anxiety and depression, or maybe creating value for them means that you're coming up with programming on campus. I know a lot of universities are looking for ways to engage their students. And so really understanding what that person needs and wants will get you so, so far. And I found that as a student, but also in my professional life, especially.
Yeah, I completely get that. And the one thing that I would want to then follow up and I think kind of question you on is, what if you're going in for a blind interview where you don't know the person? You just know that this is the objective, this is who you're speaking to, but you don't really know the person and the role. What are you going to do then?
Yeah, I mean, I love to start by asking questions. It's okay when you don't know. And I interviewed someone who really, early on in my time interviewing people for 180 degrees of impact, just put it out there and said, it's okay not to know. And that was really her big talking point, that sometimes you don't have all the answers, and no one's expecting you to have the answers if you don't have the resources to do the research and know who you're talking to. And so just as a piece of advice, whether you're going to pitch your startup or solution to someone, or you're going in for a job interview, if that's where your life is headed, always be ready with questions. Always be willing to admit that you don't know something. And know that it's okay to start out the conversation by asking questions and wanting to understand what that person cares about.
Awesome, Matt. So you talk a lot about empathizing with the person that you're working with. And when you're asking these questions, is there a particular like formula or framework that you use to really try and understand them or to pick their brain, maybe without like trying to bias their answer in some way?
Yeah, there's really not a formula that I use to approach people with questions and really dig deeper. What I do really aim to do, though, is to understand what's on their mind. And so this is something I found time and time again in interviewing people, that some people are open and you don't need to say much at all for them to just like share what's on their mind and to spill everything that they've been thinking about. Because a lot of people are just looking for permission to share and an opportunity to share and give their perspective. But sometimes you do need to dig deeper. And, you know, I would suggest asking questions like, what are some of your priorities? What have you been focused on? What are you focusing on next? How over the course of a day, how are you spending your time? How would you like to spend your time? Why is this meeting relevant to you? Why are you interested in talking with me? So it's okay to ask those questions, especially if they don't give that grounding beforehand. Again, I will say, if even if you don't know who the person is, any bit of intel or research helps. So if you know what office you're going into, that might give you a better idea of the types of questions or the types of topics and issues that a person might be most familiar with. If you know what organization you're going to, I would even suggest just peeking around their website or on LinkedIn to see who some of the employees are, who you might potentially be talking with. So that there's always a way to set yourself up for asking really powerful questions that get you the answers that you want and ultimately the results that you want from that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's more about picking up on that vibe of who you're going to pitch to and then trying to mold your pitch around that vibe. It's sort of an intangible feeling, but I think once you start doing it more, you just kind of get the knack of it.
Yeah. You just get a knack of it. And, you know, I think that's important to point out because everyone has to start somewhere. So I remember when I was starting out, having conversations with people really who had more power than me or who had influence in some way. So that was something I first really experienced on a campus level. I was intimidated and I didn't know what questions I was allowed to ask and wasn't allowed to ask. Now, with experience and with perspective, I'm able to say, like, there aren't too many questions that are off limits when you are, like, kind of all the questions I went through are all things that you're able to ask someone. And so, you know, everyone starts somewhere. It's not easy when it comes to talking with someone who has the funding that you want, has the partnership that you want, and has that power. But, you know, ultimately, the one thing I would suggest that I haven't really touched on is that if I had to give one piece of advice, I would say that the most effective thing that you could do in telling your story and in engaging with the stakeholders you want to influence is to be likable.
You want to be likable and you understand, you empathize with this person. Right. So what do you think are the key things that you need to include in this story itself? Is there like something that you should maybe start with, like the hook? Is there a way in which you should end it, a way in which you should tell the story?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are so many different ways that you could approach a story. And so there isn't one specific format that I would give. One of the challenges that I've seen for a lot of student entrepreneurs especially is that oftentimes you're given a format or you're given a structure and then you feel the need to stick with that structure. When ultimately, sometimes that structure doesn't work for you. That might have worked for the person who created the format and that might work for your, you know, the entrepreneur sitting next to you. But it's so critical, I believe, to tailor that format to work for you and work to highlight your strengths. So ultimately, I would say having a strong start, starting with a story that really hooks people in is critical because people's attention spans really wane pretty quickly. And so having a story that pulls them in is great at the beginning. It's important to remember that you have to keep people engaged in the middle. So, you know, really, I would say to stay away from talking at people and, you know, throwing information at them when really it should feel more interactive, interesting, and inspiring. And then you also touched on, Luke, the end is so important. That is a piece where I've seen people struggle a lot, whether it's a student entrepreneur, whether it's an adult or someone who is beyond the phase of being a student. And so having, you know, a good close and a strong ask for what you want from your audience is critical at the end. So there's a lot to consider, but you need to make sure that your pitch works for you rather than following one standard format.
And what do you think makes a strong ask when you've done like a good hook, done the middle bit, you kept them engaged, but now you've come to the real crunch where you need to ask them for what you want. Do you think there's some key elements that you need to include?
Absolutely. I would say that the key to a strong ask is that, you know, it is, for one, realistic. So if you go into a room and you say to the audience, I'm looking for $1 million right now, and it's an audience that might not have any funding and might not have that level of funding, an audience that might be turned off by that, you might not want to go with that approach. You might want to say, for instance, we are looking for funding. We would love to have conversations with you all, or with those of you who would be interested in providing funding. I think also providing asks that, to that point, are accessible for people is important. So if you're talking to an audience of fellow student entrepreneurs or fellow student leaders, if you're talking to an audience of administrators, I really believe that you need to be aware of what it is that they could actually commit and what they could actually do, so that your ask is something that they could fulfill. If you're asking for something that they can't do, obviously, then it's, you know, it's a waste of an ask. And so you want to make sure that what you're giving is something that they could get on board with.
Awesome. You mentioned being likable as a very important thing while pitching or storytelling. Now, I think I want to challenge you on that a little bit. Okay. So what exactly do you mean when you say that someone needs to be likable for content to spread quickly? Because, for instance, people really sometimes, many people don't like Gary Vee, and that's just because of his tone. But then there are so many people that follow him. He's got millions of followers. So he is likable in some regards. He is not likable in other regards. So when you say likable, what does it mean? Does it mean that you need to focus on a particular niche, hone into that niche, and then become likable within that niche? Or is it just like likable across all segments of your target market?
Oh, well, no one is likable to anyone. I don't think I've done anything bad to anyone, but you always will face those people who aren't on board with your message. And I think that's such an interesting point and question you pose, because there are different levels to that likability. There is, like you're saying, that global, or even some might say viral likability, where people really get on board. And, you know, I would encourage people to not worry about that. I would even encourage people to not worry about being likable within their niche, because I think oftentimes we get caught up in being something for people. And that's not what I would encourage at all. I would really encourage, you know, keeping in mind who you are, what are the things that are authentic and real about you, but things that other people would appreciate hearing. And so when I think of likability, I think of those one-on-one conversations and interactions you have, and definitely not being fake, because people will pick up on you being fake and will pick up on you trying to be something that you're not. But for me, likability in that sense means asking people about themselves, asking questions, and being genuinely interested, being supportive. I guess in a sense, the work to be likable isn't about the messaging and what you put out there. It's about who you are as a, you know, developing yourself as a human, as a conversationalist, as a business partner, as an entrepreneur. The best entrepreneurs, I believe, are the people who are the best with people. And the businesses that I've seen succeed the most are the ones that have strong relationships that they're able to leverage and maintain over time. So I think that really captures that likability idea overall. But really, I would stress that people will see through it if you're trying to be something that you're not. And I'm sure that we could touch on that more.
Yeah, Matt, I'm really glad you brought up that point, because when I like speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, it's kind of like this fake it until you make it culture, where you've kind of got to portray an image of something that often that you're not, that things are going really well, your business or your organization's being super successful, and you've got to show that to everyone. Whereas in reality, your mental health might be suffering, your team might be suffering. Lots of problems may be going wrong. And so I'm interested in like this authentic self that you say. Why do you think it's so important to be authentic?
You know, I mentioned doing the work that I've done with sexual assault. I mentioned, you know, my work and interviewing people in the social impact space. But I think my best answer to that question is just in my own experience, where, you know, back in 2017, 3 years ago, my own dad passed away. And when he passed away, I think my response was just put it out there into the world. Don't try to hide what I'm going through, because this is a tough, overwhelming, difficult thing that you're dealing with when it comes to grief. And I know tons of people deal with that in different ways every single day. And what I found in my experience was that every time I would share my story, whether that would be me making a Facebook Live video, me writing a blog post, I would be out and about. Like, I would run into a friend who would mention my blog post and mention how much that meant to them. I would be at a party sitting down and someone would mention, you know, how meaningful it was that I shared my story with them. And so back to what we were saying earlier, there was definitely a piece of vulnerability, which gets people on board. I think ultimately, the thing that I found is that by being vulnerable, by being human and being yourself, that's how you get most people to care. And so I'm thinking about Gary Vee still, because Gary Vee does this so well, where he balances his business expertise and brilliance and amazing personality with like this willingness to be honest and open and real and raw. And, you know, I've seen how far it gets people to be themselves. When you have that block where you're not opening up fully and not fully sharing yourself, that doesn't pay off. People will pick up on that. As humans, we have almost a natural sense for when something's off and when something feels inauthentic. And so I think it is critical to really focus on how you could bring yourself more fully to the conversations that you're having, because it pays off a lot more than trying to be something that you're not.
Great. So someone with like the importance of being vulnerable, being authentic with people, to someone who's maybe afraid to really take that leap and be authentic for maybe the first time, truly authentic, what would you say some steps they could take to really like undergo and be authentic for the first time?
Yeah, I would say that the more that you open yourself up to share, the better. Everything takes practice, right? So we were talking about pitching and having nerves going into a situation. We were talking about knowing how to ask the right questions. And the reality is, the first time that you pitch, it will be difficult. The first time that you go to ask questions, it will be difficult. The first time that you go to be vulnerable and share yourself, it's difficult. But something really awesome about the world that we live in is that there are so many channels, storytelling channels, where you can just start to get your perspective out there and share with the world. So for me, I've started recently sharing more and more of my perspectives about professional life and how that ties in with, you know, being a human and having a personal life and a professional life and finding balance. I've done that by making videos on LinkedIn that I put out there. And, you know, even through having my 180 Degrees of Impact podcast and interview series, I've, you know, found that by saying certain things and sharing my perspectives and, again, talking about, you know, the loss of my dad, talking about other struggles I've had, it gets me more and more comfortable to talk about them more. So while when I first started interviewing people in 2017, I'm sure I didn't feel nearly as comfortable sharing of myself. Over time, you just get comfortable. Again, practice makes perfect. And I think that applies to being comfortable and being vulnerable and sharing of yourself.
Awesome, Matt. There were so many nuggets of wisdom that you just threw at us right now. One thing that's been that's been on my mind ever since we started talking about stories is that sometimes the stories you need to tell your audience aren't always positive. Sometimes they're dark, sometimes they're negative, but sometimes they're also very necessary. Yeah. And in those cases, how would someone convey a very impactful, strong message by telling those stories, but at the same time, it's at the cost of upsetting a few people? And how would you go about advising someone like that?
You know, what I would tell them is don't be afraid to upset people. If you are telling a story and if you're upsetting people and you're getting negative feedback, I've heard this time and time again, and you know, I'm sure from different podcasters and personalities out there, that when you're getting the negative feedback, that means you're probably doing something right. You know, if a hater posts a comment on like your YouTube video, and you have all these other positive comments, it's okay. You have a community that supports you and that is on board with you. Oftentimes with social media and with, I think, how people use social media now, we're so concerned with positive responses and being liked and not saying anything that's going to get anyone to dislike us. But the reality is, there, you know, your message is only relevant to a niche of people. Whenever I talk about digital marketing to people, I'm telling them to focus on a target audience, not on reaching everyone and changing hearts and minds of everyone, but really changing hearts and minds of your target audience, reaching your target audience, building a community with your target audience. And so it's okay. It's really fine if you're, you know, making some people upset. I think what's really important, though, at least from my perspective, is to know that overall you're having a positive impact, to know that overall what you're putting out into the world is something that is better, making the world a better place, and to know that you aren't the villain of the story, that you're doing positive things, and that even heroes have detractors and arch enemies.
Yeah, Matt, well said. I think it also, one of the things, correct me if I'm wrong, is it boils down to the question of what is your why at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And if that's really strong and you know what you're doing, irrespective of the means, of course, you need to convey a story. But if you have that why, I think the story just flows.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's part of it. When you have your why, the story flows. But I've also found that, you know, tons of people, especially change makers who I connect with, have a why. But at the same time, if you have a deep why, it could be so difficult to put that into words that other people understand. Like if you are someone, for instance, like my friend and one of my teammates, Eric Dowds, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 16 when we were in high school together. And now to this day, he is an advocate in the type 1 diabetes community. And so for him, type 1 diabetes is his why. But it really took him years and years and years until actually the last few years to figure out what is his messaging, what is his value that he's creating in the world, why does he need to be the one to create this thing and bring this thing into the world. And so knowing your why is great. Knowing how to verbalize your why in a way that makes sense to other people is even greater.
Perfect. I think moving on from picking up from the friend who has got diabetes and that's his why, I think I want to take this conversation a little bit to the side of personal branding. As a student entrepreneur, we definitely need to have a strong personal brand as well as a brand for our enterprises. My question now to you would be, how do I as a student entrepreneur, and this is coming from a very personal space, because I'm not very active on Instagram or on LinkedIn, and Luke and I have had endless conversations about how we can improve our brand image, personal brand image. What would you say would be the best place to start?
I think a good place to start with your personal brand, and it's not a recommendation for a specific platform like Instagram or LinkedIn, but just in general, it is to take risks and to not be afraid. When you're at that age, especially, and when you're you know, in university or in college, what you experience is often like self-doubt, or at least in my experience to talk about that, you know, it's self-doubt, you're figuring out the world. We were talking about meetings with administrators before, you don't know what you're doing. And so it can feel a lot safer to not share and to hold back. What I would say, though, is that the people I'm most impressed by and the people who move the biggest mountains, especially in that student entrepreneur community, are the people who take the risk of sharing something of themselves. They do it in a way that's really natural for themselves. So I would say that if you're not a fan of LinkedIn or of Instagram, maybe those platforms aren't for you. Maybe you want to, you know, tell your story and build your brand on Facebook. Maybe you want to build your brand in person by, you know, branding yourself a certain way to people, whether that's by what you wear and the things that you do on campus. You know, there's so many ways to brand yourself, and it doesn't mean that you need to be on any particular platform. When it comes to platforms, what I always have reminded my clients who are focused on these storytelling campaigns is that, you know, you don't need to be on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, all of that. What you need to do is to be where your audience is. And so what I would really encourage you to do is think about, who is your audience? Who are you trying to really influence in some way? So where are they is the next question to ask. And then how could you connect your talents, your startup, your work with them? And thinking about those things, I think, is a good way to figure out where you should engage most. Maybe those people are on LinkedIn. Maybe they're in LinkedIn groups that you could join. And so if I were you, I might be posting in those LinkedIn groups and connecting with them in that way. But, you know, there's no one size fits all answer. And again, it really goes back to what feels natural to you and what feels comfortable for you.
Perfect. I completely get that, Matt. But my only pushback to that is sometimes on LinkedIn, say my audience is on LinkedIn. The one common trend that I'm seeing is people just, it's like LinkedIn's like a second resume, and most of their posts are, oh, I got accepted into X, oh, I'm doing Y. And it just feels like it's this platform where you're just flexing with your professional achievements. How do I strain away from that?
Totally. I mean, it's all a personal choice. And I think, you know, ultimately, something that I have a friend by the name of Lauren Bongiorno, who is more of a personal coach. So she helps people. Actually, she also happens to be in the diabetes world. And I know her through Eric, who I mentioned earlier. And Lauren taught me about this approach, which is the five whys. So, you know, you mentioned feeling like, you know, this is a space where people are flexing their skills and they're bragging. I don't want to be part of this. Well, then ask yourself why. Keep asking yourself why to understand what it is that makes you uncomfortable about that situation. So maybe you really don't like the fact that people are touting the positions that they have, touting the companies they work with. They're bragging about what they do. Well, you could be different. You could provide something that is a different voice. And one thing I would say that I'm really excited for with LinkedIn is that I have this network. I just realized that I am a few people away from 3,000 connections, which I don't know how that happened. That is not me bragging, because I don't know most of those people probably. But I say that to say, like, I have this network. I also have this perspective that is informed by my experiences, whether that's my grief experience I mentioned, whether that is my experiences with diversity and inclusion and race in the US culture and context, whether that's my experiences as a young person. And so, to your point, when I'm looking out at the LinkedIn audience, that doesn't reflect who I am and what I care about. And oftentimes I'll look at it and think, this is ridiculous. This is fake. This isn't authentic. This isn't making the world a better place. But what that creates is the opportunity for me to be someone who's putting out content that is the type of stuff I want to make. So I totally get what you mean about, you know, sometimes these platforms don't have the types of messages and the types of interactions that we want. But that's also why I would say it helps to take risks and be that person who leads the tide rather than wanting to follow the path that others are making. Be a leader and create the spaces, create the digital spaces that you want to see.
Yeah, so you talk about be the leader, and in particular creating the value in these posts, in this storytelling. What do you think like value is? Like, how do you create that value for people?
You know, I think similar to the question about the top leadership at the university and how to create value for them. For me, because this is a question I've struggled with a lot, I always wonder what it is that people are looking for most. And I think when you're wondering how you create value, it's so important to ask. There are always, you know, you could DM someone, direct message them, and ask them what kinds of videos and content they want to see. And I've done that, and I've gotten positive responses. And that's how you put out content into the world that you know, makes a positive difference, and that is something that, you know, that adds value for those people. Again, you could also do research. So look into trends, find out what other people are talking about. And I mentioned be a leader in the sense that you could look at those trends and you could put your own spin on it and give your own angle and view on it. And again, you'll know that you're adding value by the response that you're getting. Something that I'm even surprised by is just like how many people I will hear from, whether it is in response to an interview that I'm doing, in response to a LinkedIn video that I put out into the world. And it reminds me that even when I don't know exactly who is going to find value from what I'm creating, there are people and they'll find ways to let you know. And if you're not hearing from them, you could always reach out and ask.
All right. So, Matt, one more question that we have, and this is us consulting you openly. In terms of the human entrepreneur and the story we're putting out into the world, do you have any tips for us in real time solving a real life scenario?
Yeah, so I guess it really depends. And maybe you'll start to pick up on some of my advice coming to play here, but I want to know from you, because I don't know all of this. Like, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? Where are you trying to get? So that's what I want to know before fully answering that question.
Sure. So the human entrepreneur is all about impact, and it's all about impacting student entrepreneurs to reach their truest potential. And that's by the podcast that we have started. And what we want to do is we want to interview people like you and other student entrepreneurs and share the stories and the personal insights, but also the professional experiences and learnings that professionals themselves have had to then empower the student entrepreneurs to go on and build their projects and do great for the society that they live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing that comes to mind, because I'm sure we could have a conversation for days about this and about you know, types of things that you all could do. And I'm sure you're already doing an awesome job just, you know, getting this off the ground and building something that's valuable for people. But one thing I think is so underrated and something I wish that I utilized more in my experience as a student, and I'd encourage more student entrepreneurs to do this, is that there are so many partnerships and collaborations that you could form to get your work done and to make more of an impact, to reach new audiences. So in the case of, you know, my main project at Second Muse, NASA's International Space Apps Challenge, just last year, we collaborated with, you know, a number of different organizations, but in particular, with the purpose of, you know, getting new audiences, we engaged with an organization called Girls in Tech, because we really want to engage more women in tech. We also engaged with Black Girls Code in order to really boost the diversity and our engagement with not just women and girls, but Black women and girls. And so you know, even an organization like NASA could benefit from collaborations. And that's also why I'd say that the human entrepreneur could benefit from collaborations. So I would encourage you to reach out to other universities. I'd encourage you to reach out to friends who you know all over the world at these at different universities and institutions who would be willing to share this podcast with their network. Provide them with materials to do it. Make it really easy. So share flyers, share social media copies, share email templates, and get other people on board as ambassadors of your mission, because you could turn this into a movement. It doesn't just need to be the two of you, which is awesome enough, but it could really be this thing that other people are getting on board with and having conversations. What you're creating is, you know, a series of some really important conversations. I, for one, as a storyteller and as someone with my own, you know, podcast and company with, you know, 180 degrees of impact and Let's Care, you know, love conversations and know the power of them. And so I would encourage you to go further, to get in touch with people you know, people you don't know, and to build a movement with the human entrepreneur, because we need more human entrepreneurs and we need more people like you who are, you know, young and willing to make an impact and having conversations with all the people that you need to figure out how to make that impact. And so overall, share your story with others, get others on board and build a movement. It might sound big, but it's definitely doable. And I think it's something that you too could accomplish.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Matt. Well, we hope we've learned lots from this conversation about storytelling, so we can now improve our storytelling and grow further. So just to like start to wrap up, do you have any like top tips for the student entrepreneurs listening that come to mind? Just some final words on that.
Yeah, I think there's really one top tip, and it's to not be afraid to ask questions. As a student, you are in such a great position to ask questions. Like I literally, a week ago, had coffee with a student entrepreneur who wanted to sit down and talk and ask me questions and just connect. And I feel that students are in a unique position of power in that sense, because people, whether it's alumni of universities or other, you know, other professionals in the field, want to support students. We want to support the next generation. We want to build our legacy by supporting people who are on their way building their legacy. And so I would absolutely encourage people to have conversations. In the words of someone I interviewed, Frank Sesno, who is a former CNN correspondent, former White House correspondent here in the U.S., which is really complicated these days, and also an Emmy Award-winning journalist, has a book called Ask More. And so my piece of advice is to ask more.
Great. So we're now going to just finish out the podcast with five quick questions. So me and Varun are just going to offer some and don't overthink it, just whatever comes first to mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
Awesome. So what's your favorite book?
Oh, wow. My favorite book is Without Their Permission by Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of Reddit.
What's your favorite movie?
Oh, man, this is tough. My favorite movie, you know, I'm not a big movie person, but my favorite movie that comes to mind is Hidden Figures. It's an inspirational story about Black women at NASA doing some really incredible things. And I think it speaks to a lot of the work that I've, you know, do and a lot of the people I admire who are just these unlikely, awesome change makers.
Awesome. Awesome. And your favorite podcast?
The Human Entrepreneur.
Please.
That's the first one that came to mind. I would also say I'm huge on podcasts. So I actually have probably about 30 that are saved in my podcast library. I'm really big on podcasts that are not focused on impact or business. And so, I have no clue. I will say this, like right now, I just opened my podcast app. I my most recently listened to podcast is something called Rob Has a Podcast, and it is focused on like reality TV. So totally not important stuff. It's how I zone out. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, we all need to zone out sometimes. So Rob Has a Podcast is that one for me a lot of the time.
Awesome. What's your favorite song?
Oh, man. I feel like this might be a situation where I also open my Spotify, but you know what, I'm big on, you know, all sorts of music. I don't have one right now. I love, I would say one of my favorite all time songs though, probably is, On to the Next One by Jay-Z. I'll give you that. But there are tons of others. And I think I probably have a playlist I could send your way at some point.
And your first thing that you do in the morning?
Definitely roll out of bed and, you know, is this like one of those trick questions where it's like,
No.
Probably
this
rub my
this
eyes.
This is completely authentic.
You know what? I will say one thing that I do in the morning, I typically get up pretty early and I'll just take time to sort of just be while the world is quiet. And so it's not as much of doing a thing because often we're focused on doing things, but you know, just kind of taking it in and breathing and experiencing the silence. And so, yeah, I'll typically get up early just to feel the stillness of the world.
Yeah, and what's the last thing you do before going to bed?
Oh my God, most of the time I probably my day grinds to a halt and I'll just pass out. But if there's one thing that I could say is, you know, I think it's just trying, and I'm trying to do this more and more, but reflect on the things that really went well out of the day. It's so easy when you are going and going and going to be focused on that moment and what you do. But lately, especially in the last year of my life, I've spent a lot of time just reflecting on the funny moments. So if anything, it's probably laughing, just because there you could really find humor in just about any situation. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to find humor in most situations.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a really nice learning.
Yeah, that's a great way to end it, Matt. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We've learned so much in this last recording. Is there any things that you want to plug at the end where people can find you or the things that you're building?
Sure. I would, you know, first and foremost, I would tell people just to reach out to me directly, whether they loved anything I said, whether they hated anything I said, whether they, you know, whatever it is, email me at hello@lets.care. And you could check out my work on Let's Care and 180 Degrees of Impact just by visiting www.lets.care. But yeah, I'd encourage people to get in touch. I think, you know, part of my story, an empowering part of my story, has been having conversations and connecting with people. And so I always welcome the opportunity, especially if someone is bold enough to reach out. And so reach out, get in touch. Something else I would plug is just mentioning that with Let's Care, I'm really excited to be working on a social change docuseries that's focused on underrepresented change makers, and it's called 20s and Change. And so it touches on your point, Brune, about really sometimes you're putting out something into the world that focuses on an issue that's making an impact. Not everyone agrees with it, but we have such a powerful, solid community around it so far. And I've really only seen positive responses to that so far. And so that's the thing I'm most excited about and working on. And again, email me hello@lets.care and visit www.lets.care to check out the trailer for that and to see more of the stories and conversations that I've heard and that I've had.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Yeah, thank you too. And again, it's awesome that you're creating something this epic and putting it out into the world. And I really hope this only grows and grows and continues to make an impact in people's lives.
Thank you so much, Matt. It really means the world to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.